Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan Doby Chase, and today I'm thrilled to bring to you Mr. Jonathan Samuel Eddy, a man with three first names. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I'm so excited to hear your work today and listen to you. And you've been someone who's been, we were just talking before the air about comedy and how comedy became part of your poetry. And certainly that's not all you have to offer, but some of the things that you have said and done are just hysterically funny, and I am so, so excited to start talking to you today. But before that, what have you been up to?
I'm also a thespian. I love the theater. So this mm-hmm. past year, I made a return to the stage.
You did?
And... yes, I appeared in a world premiere, Ace, the Eugene Bullard story, at the State Theater of Georgia, the Springer Opera House. And
nice.
I also am a teaching artist, so I taught this summer over 600 mm-hmm. kids creative writing at the Springer Opera House. And I'm really like, it's one of those things when you're an artist and you work in a lot of different mediums, and sometimes mm-hmm. I can't do it simultaneously. So if I'm doing poetry, theater may get slighted or vice versa. But this year I found a really happy medium, and I'm still working in the theater. I'm still I run a youth literary arts organization here, Fountain City Slam, where we do weekly writing workshops, community-wide workshops, poetry slam, open mics, all that stuff. And now I've become better at incorporating theater into the work, into the workshops
beautiful.
And stuff. So what I've been working on lately is a smile to my face. It was so frustrating
mm-hmm.
having to put one aside to work on the other.
Mm.
But now I'm seeing them fuse themselves in some magical ways, not only in my work, but in the work of the youth that I interface with.
Well, that's perfect. That's really wonderful. Now, you said you worked with 600 kids this summer?
I did. 600 kids from the theater camp is here in Columbus, Georgia, but kids come from all over. It's a fabulous program, and it focuses on the process versus the product. Because there are so many great transferable skills that come through not only the writing process, but the acting and performance process that are great, that these kids can take into their academics, that can take on, into their jobs, and some really great practices that come out of it. So it was 600 kids, but it did not feel like it.
Wow.
It did not feel like it. It was a complete joy.
So they're broken up into smaller groups, and they visit you and other people during the camp?
Yes, they're broken. It's different sessions. So there's a 4-week session,
mm-hmm.
a 3-week session, and a 2-week session, and they're broken up by age group. And I believe
the
camp. I didn't teach the young ones, but it starts at the age of 5, and goes all the way up to 18. And they have creative writing, scene study, voice and movement, musical theater. So there's a lot of different pods that they visit each day.
Wow. That sounds wonderful. It truly, truly does. Truly does. Hey, I was wondering, just as we start the show now, if I could get you to read something.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you.
I will share a newish poem. With you. And it's entitled For John Henry. For John Henry, Man of few words, boy of even fewer, barely laughs, soft-spoken, half-smiles, something they'd misdiagnose Medicaid now, shy, poker face, won't waste breath on words, couldn't read him with a trifocal try, discern indifference from anger, from joy, best wishes for John Henry, a man of few words, boy of even fewer. Couldn't read as well as he could write, couldn't write as well as he could read, so they say he kept to himself just enough to get by, enough to enter the service one day. Fought in Vietnam, made it to an army base in Kansas, somehow met my mom and made me. I'd like to thank God a wicked sense of humor for John Henry, man of few words, boy of even fewer, me his seed, so much to say, an artist. And I dare not start a conversation or call on the phone, can gauge how he's doing by the frequencies of hellos, you still theirs, grunts, sighs, moans, an old black man's Morse code. For John Henry, fluent in the nonverbal, would agitate the talkative if he wasn't 6'2", dark-skinned, jet black hair, you wouldn't know he was there. There. 1950s, Clarksdale, Mississippi, and believe me, if you ever reach the city limits and fart, you'll be in Memphis before you can spray Febreze. Small town known for the blues. Ain't much to say when B.B. and Lucille speak for you, the intelligent masses. It takes a certain brilliance to survive below the poverty line. My great and great-greats, uncles and aunties were geniuses, and they called this black boy mute snake. His moves on the basketball court held a quiet advantage. I would try to fill those soft-spoken shoes one day, but I dribbled best out my mouth. Dotted I's, crossed T's, jumped to conclusions, best within margins, composition, notebook, my zone, defense, 6'5" of awkwardness, body just rejecting this, we clearly different. I used to wonder if he liked me. Selfishly never wanting for nothing, simultaneously longing for more than a shrug, but his nonverbal let me know that there was love behind that stoic, full of barely audible praise. He worked hard, provided, cried when he dropped me off to college, taught me to tie a tie in sign language, iron my clothes in closed caption, creases that could slice bread, and those simple actions he said that black folk got looked like they going somewhere to get somewhere in life. And may the knot on the top of that tie be the closest thing to a new show neck will ever know, never spray start stiffen in a ditch or tree. 1950s Mississippi was a lot to not talk about. 1960s Mississippi was a lot to come up out. This apple lived a life that makes this orange proud. And on rare occasion, this apple would open his mouth and say, I just want you to be better than me. How? When I'm only the better half of you, you better half of me, where I speak, you move, where you moved, I speak. We got this awesome group piece where I'm vocal cord for your trial, tribulation, and success. Push forward by your work, strong as words, push forward. You, all limbs and legs, me, all mouth and tongue, God's punchline. Me, yours, you, mine, John Henry. My sacrificial poet.
Bravo. Bravo.
Oh, thank you.
This is autobiographical. Autobiographical.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So John Henry's your real father. Amazing. You know, two things that I really, really love, and I'm sure that the kids notice too when you start with this, is like your reference to apples and oranges without having to say what exactly. I mean, I love that kind of writing where you lead a reader into understanding what it is you're saying instead of being like a bossy writer who tells people what to feel. And I think that you do that expertly in this piece. And the other part is the whole basketball analogy. Just beautiful work in that section too. I love
Thank
what
you.
You have to say, and I love how you package it. Does that come naturally for you, or do you have to work at it? I mean, how much revision goes into your writing process?
A lot goes into it, and
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel when I was younger in my 20s, and was heavy into slam. It was nothing for me to just write a piece, memorize it, put it up for the slam that same day. But as I've gotten
Yeah.
older, and I'm gonna say wiser with air quotes, I've come to appreciate the writing process because it is a process. And I used to
Yes.
feel bad when I put something on paper and I wouldn't get back to it for months or even a year. But in though that time, I had grown so much. I've gone through so many things that the piece takes on a whole new meaning. So one of
Right.
the best advice I got was at a writing event where Pearl Klieg, playwright, poet, novelist, was doing a master's class, and she said, you know, the piece will let you know when it's done. So, you know, it's like we as writers got to realize it's a crock pot and not a microwave. And I think that that's one of the things that can happen if your entry into this art form is slam.
Yes.
Because, you know, oftentimes you can win money, you can win acclaim. So we may slight the process for that and not really let the poem tell the story it wants to tell. So that's something I had to learn and I've grown to
Right.
appreciate. So the writing process is an important part of my life, and I've accepted however long it takes, it takes.
Yeah. So how long did this piece that you just read for us take?
I started this piece last year, or
Yeah.
actually 2 years ago. I was at, I think it was IWIPS in Flagstaff. I was volunteering, and it was one of those moments where, you know, you're around so much poetry, and being a playwright, I hear voices. I used to think that I was crazy, but there are characters or there are stanzas talking to me, so it
Yeah.
plopped down on the page. And I came back to it periodically within the last 2 years, and now I think it's at a place where this is what this poem wants to say. So some, of course, I have work that doesn't take 3,000 years to do, but this piece it did. And I've rarely talked about my dad and my work, so you
Yes.
know I've written pieces about my mother, grandmother, even my sister, nephews, and nieces, but this was just a piece that just slowly came along.
It's interesting that that came along slowly, just like conversation with your dad probably came along slowly. It seems ironic and fitting.
Yeah, the process speaks to our relationship. We have a good relationship, but we're really a lot alike. He's real introverted, you know, and outside of performance and everything, I am too. So we can communicate, be in the same room, just look at each other, and it's a weird thing that we have. So that's
Wow.
why in the piece it says we have this weird group piece. I could call him right now on the phone. We'd be on the phone for 30 seconds, but we would have caught up on everything that we needed to catch up with since the last time we talked. So, yeah, we have this nonverbal thing down to a T.
That's fantastic. That's really awesome. And I know you mentioned Mississippi in the piece a couple of times, but I know you asked from Georgia. Were you from Mississippi before Georgia?
My father is from Mississippi. So he was military and he wound up being stationed in Columbus, well, Fort
I
Benning,
see.
and that's where we stayed. So yeah, he's originally from Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Wow. Wow. Growing up there, I bet it was an interesting thing. He would be interesting to get some conversation out of him about that. I'm sure that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say definitely just hearing the stories. And there was a lot, like it's in the piece, there's a lot he doesn't talk about that,
Right.
you know, I may have gotten from other family members or just context clues and things that he said. But
Right.
it's a beautiful place, and it's actually Morgan Freeman's Blues Club is there, and they have a
Oh.
huge blues festival in Clarksdale every summer. So, and of course, the food is delicious. So it's a great small little place, and I'm grateful that it's responsible for my father. I'm also grateful that he got out of there.
Yeah,
So.
I can understand that for sure, for sure. So going back to what you do with young people, I know that you were coaching a slam team this summer, right? The summer? Or is that
Yes,
something that you
yes.
do in your artist in residence?
This is something that I've been doing for the last, we're going on our 7th year. And it's through the program that I run, the Fountain City Teen Poetry Slam. We started 7 years ago, and each year we take a group of teens from the Columbus, Georgia area to participate and compete in Brave New Voices, which is the
Yes.
International Youth Poetry Festival. And it's something that I started out of love and out of necessity, because I discovered the spoken word art form my senior year of college, and it was great for
Oh,
me. It was
really?
therapeutic for me. Yes, it was 2004, actually, was the first time I ever set foot in a slam. So I just began to thinking, what would life have been had this outlet been available to me in middle school or high school? How would have things changed? How would I have dealt with my emotions and my feelings and circumstance differently if I had an outlet? And from that thought, I have serviced hundreds of kids and families, and I've taken 7 teams, well, 6 teams, and we're working on the 7th now. But very much the same process in that summer camp, where we focus on the process versus the product, and they go through the writing process. They get performance tips that not only help them in slam, but they also help them in their presentations in schools, job
Oh,
interviews. The thing I
sure.
like about slam is that with those time constraints, you have to be able to get your point across in a small time frame, or you suffer point deductions. So that's
Right.
something that they're getting now, and it again helps them in interviews and presentations at school, getting to your point, but not diluting the story at the same time. So
Right.
a really good, and it helps with editing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I give you so much credit for working with the youth because honestly, their voices really need to be heard. It's so sad when ageism kind of makes what they have to say to some adults less important than what other people have to say just because of the number of years that they've been born. And I believe that in reverse too about older people and how valuable their voices are. You don't see them much in the slam community, and unless they've been somebody who's been indoctrinated for years and years, and I've been trying to get some of the people who appreciate slam so much to get up on the stage themselves. But it almost seems like it's more difficult to get people who are older but have never done it before to get up on the stage. Was that difficult for you, your senior year of college, just getting up there and doing it? Or because of your theater background, was it easier for you?
I would say that it was actually getting on the stage wasn't a problem, but actually sharing my own work was. I had notebooks upon notebooks upon notebooks where I've always written my entire
Yes.
life. My issue was sharing and being vulnerable and being transparent, which is why I look back at like a lot of the pieces that I started out with in 2004. They were, like, I would say to a great extent, persona pieces. I was
Yeah.
doing them, they were scoring well, but the real Jonathan Samuel Eddy was hiding behind these words.
Right.
There were poems I was writing because, oh, this will do well here. I'm not necessarily passionate about it. This isn't necessarily me, but that's that immature young writer thing, I guess, that happens. I see it in my kids. But performing wasn't a problem. It was actually growing and getting to the point of I can share this with these people. I can share this.
Yes.
Someone can heal from this. This is bigger than me. That needed to happen, and it eventually happened. But it was some bumps along the way.
Hey, I was wondering if, because it's a little bit more than halfway through the show, if I could get you to read a second piece.
Absolutely. This is another new piece that I have. And the piece started in cleaning up and going through some things of mine and my family's. So here we go. It's called Too Long, Too Tight. Have held on far too long, too tight, caught dust, vice gripped in my throat, bunny's habitat atop, blazed trails of my regrets, fuzzy fingerprinted, contemplated armies of salvation, wheels of good to carry off this hold. Far too long, too tight, have become a functional antiquated fume inhaler, fresh air of phase not matriculated to, avoided at all cost. Memories are expensive. Breath stagnant. Record player I barely play. Soundtrack reminds and remains on repeat. Never made a reality of you again, of us again. Ghost traipse across the stacks and piles of shit. The cure somewhere underneath there, or there, or there. Twins the too long, too tight recollections of perfect stains won't bother washing. It dry cleans so well over there, and twinst used to be a blueprint, now an epitaph, periodically editing itself. Ain't brought much back, but thoughts deflated by truth, tainted by fantasy. Here we are, here and there, boxes and bins of successes and sins won't concede to disappearing acts. Can't lose myself. They contain so much of me, gently used, the trail of you, the past of us, the where you coming from, and where I've been are suspended in corners of rooms and minds, an uncomfortable, comfortable stillness, a shortness of gulps in, even shorter out. All of this belongs somehow, every ink drop a scab, scotch tape scars, framed fragments, thrice read, rabbit-eared books, now postcards from the other side. Seen my innocence once or twice, wink at me in the good eye of a teddy bear, old enough to be me. But he's somehow still cuddly, still soft, still managed to sit upright, still manage a smile. After all this time, I need all of this time. Everything. I'm sorry. All of this belongs somehow to me.
Beautiful, beautiful work, just beautiful. I really appreciate, what you're trying to say. And it's true, those things that you hold on to for a long, long time, and then you ask yourself why you still have them, and there's always some reason behind it, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always a story.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I bet that's a prompt you could use with the young people about what is something that you've held on to for a very long time, longer than you normally would, and why. I mean, there are so many stories that come out of that. I love it. And, you know, we've got about 5.5 minutes. I want to give you time to do your last poem, but I also want to make sure that I hit on, is there anything that you want to promote, events, merchandise, anything of your own that you wanted to make sure that you made mention of?
Yes, I have a chat book that is it's entitled A Whole Nother Kind of Missing. It's dedicated to my mother, whom passed 2 years ago from Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry.
Yes, it is a horrible thing, and we're going to find a cure for it. I'm certain of it.
Thank
and
God.
Prayerful for it.
Right.
But the chat book is available on my website, johnsamedd.com, johnsamedd.com. You can purchase it there. And I also have information on all the things that I do and that I'm working on. So if you want to book me for a feature or a writing workshop, I am available.
Fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that. And please, go to his website, check things out, because Jonathan's an amazing artist, and I'd love for more people to experience his work. He's amazing. And I hope you don't mind me saying that, like you're in third person and not even here.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Is there anything that you find yourself doing before you go on stage that really helps you? What are your rules? What are the things that you know that can help other writers to do a better job delivering their poetry? Since you're into theater, that stuff maybe comes easier to you than others.
I would say always warm up. Even if it's just a vocal warm up, do some tongue twisters, sing some scales, and you don't have to sound like Luther Vandross or Whitney Houston to sing scales. But it's really good to warm your voice up, because you never know if you're going to have a mic, what the sound system's like,
mm-hmm.
what the acoustics are like in the room. So it makes it easier to adjust to that, and tell your truth. And know that no one can tell your story better than you. So always approach the mic with that confidence, but always warm up. And that's something I had to learn to do. But
it
works.
Good, and that's great. That's great for us to hear. And we're coming into the last 3.5 minutes, and I want to give you again time to finish up. So I want to thank you for being here with me today. It went so fast, I can hardly believe it. And, you know, if there's anything that you want to promote later on, or you want to bring your kids on and have them read because they've gotten to a point where you want them to have a venue, please feel free to give me a call or send me a message. I would love to hear more from you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. And now to read us out of the show. Unfortunately, I would love to talk to you more. Here's Mr. Jonathan Samuel Eddy.
I drive a minivan. I know, sexy, right? That line alone will do it for the vine. That statement in my face now reside on girldontdatehim.com. Because you know he got that Brady Bunch van. And ain't that Brady Bunch in that motherfucker? What is he smuggling? Pesticide? Old Orkin van driving face ass. What you going to do, raid me? Because you couldn't pay me to ride around in that third world ice cream truck. Because that's what the fuck belongs in there. Ice cream, sandwiches, strawberry shortcakes. Certainly not a brother of your stature and your age. Old Jell-O pudding pop face ass. And see, I'm no Jell-O pudding pop face. I'm an artist. And nobody pays me to do shit. So this 99 Ford Windstar is an upgrade from the Nike swoosh and Bobos I got on BOGO. You don't even know the trauma one artist endures on public transportation. MARTA got me on medication, and this Metro bus situation got me on a propofol drip. So this 99 Ford Windstar is the shit. It moves me comfortably and safely from point A to point B with power sliding doors and rear air conditioning. The safety features are amazing. The safety features are amazing. I repeat this to myself daily, because riding around in this Scooby-Doo unsolved mystery van shit is lame. But at least the brother's safe. You can't beat that with a stick, but you got to beat the starter with a stick to get a start. And the engine sounds like Mufasa, Mufasa, Mufasa. You're going to hear her roar, especially uphill and over 30 miles per hour. The heat thinks it's air. The air thinks it's heat. And Mother Nature think me dead meat, so I'll be that well-done beef brisket riding comfortably and safely in this crock-pot Frigidaire. And I might be poor. I might be black. I may even be sweating Esther roll down my back, but by God, I'm here, and I've got 99 Ford Windstar reasons to be thankful for. Thank you, used car Jesus. Didn't have no job and bad credit, but you didn't let it block my blessing. No, no, no. You said if I showed you my W-2, I could get on the first thing smoking. That motherfucker was smoking for real, y'all. Every time I get inside, I feel like she's bringing me closer to God. I'm like, Lord, let there be headlights. And of course, she brings about a lot of negative attention. I got paper saying I can't go within 100 feet of Boy Scout conventions. And the other day, when I was getting gas, a sister wife to my Windstar pulled alongside, and a sweet lady named Jody asked if I was as excited as she was about the upcoming co-ed spring soccer season. The Lightning's going all the way. Jody, these may look like mom jeans, but I ain't got no fucking kids. I'm highly offended. Always come highly recommended whenever anybody got to move shit. You know Jonathan ain't got no kids, and he got that minivan, and he ain't got nothing better to do than move your shit and your shit and your shit. I'm sick of this shit. Y'all stop talking about my shit, because this minivan moves this artist comfortably and safely from point A to point B.
Oh, just wonderful. Just wonderful. I love it so much. This has been Spoken Heard. I'm Susan W. Chase, my guest today with Jonathan Samuel Eddy. Again, look him up online and check him out. And next week, we'll have another great show. And until then, be kind to one another.